Court filings reveal full list of celebrities named in Diddy's sex trafficking lawsuit. The US braces for major supply chain disruption following Baltimore's bridge collapse disaster. And a new FDA study admits that the COVID injections cause seizures in toddlers. These stories and more tonight. I'm your host, Maria Z, and this is Vigilant Fox's Media Blackout. Do Epstein-style sex trafficking and blackmail rings exist outside of Epstein himself? That's a question we've asked on this broadcast on more than one occasion. But one we haven't touched on is the extent to which it may exist in the hip-hop world. Sending shockwaves around the world is this current news flooding everybody's feed of Sean Diddy Combs, whose homes were raided this week by Homeland Security as part of a sex trafficking probe. Two homes located in Los Angeles and Miami owned by Diddy were raided by Homeland Security Monday in connection with a federal investigation into sex trafficking, sexual assault, and the solicitation and distribution of illegal narcotics and firearms. In video circulating online, law enforcement officers can be seen walking through the LA home with guns drawn and people being questioned in front of the home. It is unknown if Diddy was one of them. The LA raid took place in the lavish Holmby Hills neighborhood. Sources confirmed to TMZ that Homeland Security was in the middle of raiding the musician's properties. Combs has been accused of several crimes, including one lodged by an anonymous woman who claims that he and his two friends sexually assaulted her when she was 17. Combs has filed a motion to have the case thrown out. Three other women have accused Combs of sexual assault after his ex, a singer known by Cassie, sued him last November. The most recent accuser claims that after being supplied with copious amounts of drugs and alcohol, Diddy and two pals took turns violently raping the teen as she drifted in and out of consciousness, leaving her in so much pain that she could barely stand nor remember how she got home, the Daily Mail reports. The complaint, which is cited in the article, records instances of extreme sexual abuse, savage beatings, drug-filled hotel orgies, and rape. Cassie, meanwhile, said that Combs physically abused her and forced her into sex with others on video. In February, Combs was accused of sexual misconduct by a male music producer, Rodney Little Rod Jones, who sued him over allegations that Combs grabbed his genitals without consent and that he also tried to groom Mr. Jones into having sex with another man, telling him it was a, quote, normal practice in the music industry, end quote. There are also videos of what appears to be Diddy grooming Justin Bieber at 15 years old included in the article. Well, now a list of names has been released in Diddy's sex trafficking lawsuit. The lawsuit filed by producer Rodney Jones claims Sean Diddy Combs used his affiliation with Prince Harry, yet another royal, along with other big-time celebrities such as T.D. Jakes, to give himself and his associates legitimacy when throwing sex trafficking parties where sexual abuse allegedly occurred. The celebrities in Jones's lawsuit have not been named defendants in the sex trafficking case. The list as follows features a number of prominent people such as Stevie J, Young Miami, Prince Harry, Georgia Mass Choir, Bishop T.D. Jakes, and a number of other individuals also. Diddy also has a long history of propping up Democrat candidates in election seasons. In 2004, Diddy, at the height of his rap career, headed the campaign Vote or Die, a political group aimed to get young people and minorities to vote. In the same year, Diddy interviewed Hillary Clinton at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. You can watch that there. Diddy also interviewed Obama during the 2004 DNC, and in 2008, he coined the phrase Obama or Die during the 2008 BET Awards. We'd be naive to think that this ends at Epstein. And when we consider Epstein's ties to people like Bill Gates and the United Nations, who seem to have an extreme amount of influence on public policy that destroys the West, is it too far of a stretch to consider that hip-hop artists involved with propping up the Democratic Party, who are also destroying America and, by extension, the West, are also running similar operations, especially in consideration of some of these allegations? Hip-hop artists like Beyoncé and Jay-Z have long been the subject of much public scrutiny with their open admiration for the Illuminati and being possessed on stage, for example. How deep does this rabbit hole go? Many questions to be answered, and we will, of course, continue to report as more comes out. Something is up. Something big. Something suspicious. You can't quite pinpoint it, but you can't deny it either. All you have to do is trust your gut. Listen to it and prepare with My Patriot Supply. Since 2008, My Patriot Supply has helped millions of American families prepare for the uncertain future. Many of them choose 3-month emergency food kits. With 22 food and drink varieties, there'll be no food boredom. With over 2,000 calories per day, there'll be no starvation. And sealed inside ultra-durable 4-layer packaging, these ready-hour meals last up to 25 years in storage. Stock up on all the food kits your family needs at our website, preparewithvnn.com. You'll get each kit for $200 off. Protect yourself, protect your people. Get your kits at preparewithvnn.com. They ship fast and free. Preparewithvnn.com. Well, a catastrophic supply chain crisis is materializing after the Baltimore Bridge collapse disaster. Now, we will go through this article, but first, we want to go through this particular article, which is that Intel sources are claiming that the Baltimore Bridge collapse was not an accident. For anyone who's not familiar with this story, early last week, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, MD, collapsed after a cargo ship collided with a support column, causing the bridge to collapse. The Francis Scott Key Bridge is a significant commuter route. Now, a lot of footage has been shared online about this, but I want to take you to this particular clip, which shows the lights coming on and off of the ship. Take a look at this. So you can see the lights come off there. They stay off for a time. And then they come back on. And you can watch the way in which the ship is turning, which Lara Logan has commented on. We'll go over that in a moment. The lights come off again. And then we see smoke. And the lights are back on. And then we can witness the catastrophic collision about to occur. Horrible footage. An absolutely terrible disaster as we witness that bridge collapsing. And so Lara Logan's report on the quote-unquote accident is very different from the reports in the mainstream media. Here's what she had to say from multiple Intel sources. The Baltimore Bridge collapse was an absolutely brilliant strategic attack on US critical infrastructure, most likely cyber, and our Intel agencies know it. In information warfare terms, they just divided the US along the Mason-Dixon line, exactly like the Civil War. The second busiest strategic roadway in the nation for hazardous material is now down for 4 to 5 years, which is how long they say it will take to recover. The bridge was built specifically to move hazardous material, fuel, diesel, propane gas, nitrogen, highly flammable materials, chemicals, and oversized cargo that cannot fit in the tunnels, and that supply chain is now crippled. Lara says, make no mistake, this was an extraordinary attack in terms of planning, timing, and execution. The two critical components on that bridge are the two load-bearing pylons on each end closest to the shore. They are bigger, thicker, and deeper than anything else. These are the anchor points, and they know that hitting either one of them would be a fatal wound to the integrity of the bridge. Half a mile of the bridge went into the river. Likely you will have to build a new one. Also caused so much damage to the structural integrity of the bottom concrete part that you cannot see and won't know until they take the wreckage apart. Structural destruction likely absolute. The attack was perfectly targeted, Logan says. They figured out how to bring us down. As long as you stay away from the teeth of the US military, you can pick the US apart. We are arrogant and ignorant. Lethal combination. Obama said they would fundamentally change America, and they did. We are in a free fall ride on a roller coaster right now. No brakes, just picking up speed. The footage shows the cargo ship never got in the approach lane in the channel. You have to be in the channel before you get into that turn. The location was precise and deliberate. Choose a bend in the river where you have to slow down and commit yourself. Once you are committed in that area, there is not enough room to maneuver. Should have had a harbor pilot to pilot the boat. You are not supposed to traverse any obstacles without the harbor pilot. They chose a full moon so they would have maximum tidal shift, rise and fall, brisk flow in that river on a normal day, and have had a lot of rain recently, so water was already moving at a good pace. Hit it with enough kinetic energy to knock the load-bearing pylon out from under the highway, which fatally weakens the span, and then 50% of the bridge fell into the water. And she says, all those factors, when you look at it, this is how you teach people how to do this type of attack, and there are so few people left in the system who know this. Now we move on to the catastrophic supply chain aspect of the Baltimore Bridge collapse. But before we do, briefly, we want to mention that a new Wall Street Journal report cites people familiar with the investigation into the crash as saying that contaminated fuel could have contributed to the container ship Dali losing power. According to a Coast Guard briefing report reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, Dali's lights began to flicker about an hour after the ship began steaming down the Marine Channel out of the Baltimore Inner Harbor. Quote, the vessel went dead, no steering power and no electronics, said an officer aboard the ship. One of the engines coughed and then stopped. The smell of burned fuel was everywhere in the engine room and it was pitch black, the officer said. A naval architect in Athens has said that contaminated fuel could seize up the ship's main power generators and result in a complete blackout and loss of propulsion. During a press conference, Jennifer Homendy, the chair of the National Transportation Safety Board, said an investigation is underway to review the vessel's operations and safety logs and black box recorders to determine what happened in the moments leading up to Baltimore's biggest industrial disaster in several generations. Now, hours after the incident, the White House and federal government agencies quickly ruled out a cyber attack or industrial sabotage as the source of the ship's power loss. It's just been hours. There's still an investigation to take place, but you're saying definitely no, it wasn't a cyber attack. That is very suspicious. According to S&P Global Market Intelligence, the Port of Baltimore handled about 3% of all East Coast and Gulf Coast imports in the year through January 31st. It's a crucial terminal for European car makers such as Mercedes-Benz Group AG, Volkswagen AG, and BMW. It's also the second largest terminal for US coal exports, with the shutdown likely crimping shipments to India, and many more terminals will be shuttered. The 984-foot ship was hauling containers of Chinese-made furniture, appliances, plasticware, and construction machinery. Expect a localized shortage of these products, and here are some of the items that the Dali delivered to Baltimore, including ladies' vests, sweet rice and barley drinks, tape dispensers, instant noodles, ergonomic scissors, steel coils, canned coconut milk, the list goes on. U.S. Customs and Border Protection provides a view into Dali's cargo, which you can see linked in the article. And the question here is, why didn't the state of Maryland or Baltimore City install protective barriers against ship strikes on the key bridge? Were woke Democrats in Annapolis too concerned about DEI and burning the state into the ground with reckless spending than care about infrastructure? Yet another failure by Democrats who are asleep at the wheel, says the article. Now, I want to go back to a key thing that Lara Logan said. The Baltimore Bridge was built specifically to move hazardous material, including fuel, diesel, propane gas, nitrogen, highly flammable materials, chemicals, and oversized cargo that can't fit into the tunnels. And that supply chain is now crippled, along with some of the food and other items that the Dali was responsible for transporting. In 2018, Smart Cities World published an article titled Turning Baltimore into a Smart City. You can also see on the Global Covenant of Mayors website, which publicly lists all of the cities that are already signed up to the Smart City Agenda, that Baltimore is listed. Anyone familiar with the Smart City agenda would know that inside smart cities, residents are limited to what they can access in terms of products and food. In fact, according to Policy Horizons Canada and their Exploring Biodigital Convergence publication, you won't get to decide which products you want or need. AI will do it for you, and a drone will deliver whatever AI says you want or need. Naturally, that would be impossible to enforce because people wouldn't stand for being denied certain products, but if a major supply chain was damaged in a way that would take years to restore, it certainly does open the opportunity for a problem-reaction-solution situation orchestrated by those who are determined to implement the Smart City agenda via various means. Lahaina, anyone? But not every location experiences precise fires that happen to avoid blue roofs like Lahaina. Some locations experience a slow burn style of conditioning that starts with things like supply chain issues. One thing is certain, fuel and diesel will be limited in supply inside smart cities because private vehicle ownership isn't allowed in smart cities. This is absolutely an aspect to be aware of, and we encourage Baltimore residents to keep an eye out on some of the developments in their districts, which is what they call the various sections of smart cities. Joe Rogan has exposed Big Pharma immunity from COVID-19 jab liability, and the establishment really doesn't like it when conversations like this rack up tens of millions of views. I can assure you of that. During the Tuesday edition of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast featuring comedian Kurt Metzger, the pair scoffed at the fact that Big Pharma companies behind the ineffective and deadly COVID jabs are immune from being sued. Take a listen.
They released the bivalent ones where they didn't have any human testing.
Well, like, I guess they actually did, didn't they?
Turns out it doesn't work at all. Not only does it not work at all, it actually works worse.
Well, good thing you can't sue.
Yeah.
Hey, thing you can't sue. The one drug, they're probably more honest because you can't sue.
Isn't that weird? Isn't it weird that you can just like lie to people and you could force people to take things and then you could hide the side effects and you can't sue them? That seems, I don't want to say it seems corrupt because that seems like
I'm
out of line.
You'd be way the fuck out of line.
Yeah.
That's like saying there somebody asked for a litter box at their kid's school.
Yeah, that's out of line.
Shut up.
It's out of line. There's no way they would do that to you over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And you keep falling for it like fucking Charlie Brown going for that football with Lucy.
I'm not smart. I'm that Charlie Brown stupid. Yeah. How do you still take the kick now at this point?
God damn it. You tackle Lucy.
Like, I don't.
Take her out.
During another portion of the interview, Rogan criticized Israel for what he called bombing civilians with robots as per footage shared by Edward Snowden of what appeared to be unarmed civilians being targeted by drones, and mentioned the chilling effect of anyone speaking out against what it appears to be a genocide, an anti-Semite. This is certainly something that is on the rise, with multiple countries enforcing laws that seem to protect Israel's actions and criminalize anyone who dares to criticize them. With the recent cancellation of Candace Owens from the Daily Wire following some of her objective statements regarding the moving target of the definition of anti-Semitism, Thor Ben Shapiro insinuated the reason for was that the Daily Wire does have lines and that potentially Candace Owens has crossed them. So much for their free speech stance and the glaring hypocrisy of the Daily Wire and Mr. Ben Facts Don't Care About Your Feelings Shapiro. This has been a huge topic of contention for many conservative outlets of late, with the public demanding more transparency from organisations such as the Daily Wire as to whether they really are America first. One thing is certain, there are efforts underway in France, Australia, Germany and other countries to make criticism of Israel's actions illegal. That's another topic, along with vaccine harms, the establishment doesn't want someone like Joe Rogan addressing. We're glad he did. Debt. You go to bed thinking about it, you wake up thinking about it. Here's the truth. The system traps you in debt. High interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt, and insane inflation keeps you stuck paycheck to paycheck. Done with Debt is your lifeline. Done with Debt has an ingenious new strategy to help erase your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Done with Debt analyzes all the debt options you qualify for. They know how to reduce bills, they know how to cut interest rates, and their skilled staff of negotiators know how to get debt out of your life permanently without bankruptcy and without a loan. Done With Debt are the experts in brilliant strategies for eliminating debt. But you need to hurry because some debt solutions are time sensitive. Here's how easy they make it. Go to donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Select VNN, Vigilant News Network, at checkout. That's donewithdebt.com. A caller has dropped a bone-chilling question on Robert Kennedy Jr. On Wednesday evening's News Nation broadcast hosted by Chris Cuomo, Will, a caller belonging to the baby boomer generation, directed a haunting inquiry towards independent presidential hopeful Robert Kennedy Jr. He asked, "You're going after some of the largest entities that exist, Big Pharma, Big Agra, Big Government, the CIA, the FBI. Are you going to live? Are they going to come after you?" Kennedy delivered an unforgettable response. Let's take a listen.
You are going after some of the largest entities that exist, Big Pharma, Big Agra, Big Government, the CIA, the FBI. Do you think that that means that we elect you, right? Are you going to live? Are they going to come after you?
Well, that's not something, Will, that I worry about. I think I'm not stupid about it. So I have, the government, the White House has denied me Secret Service protection. But I do take precautions, and I have a very good security firm, Gavin DeBecker Associates, that is doing my security right now. So I'm not, stupid about it, but it's not something that preoccupies me. I was raised in a family where we were taught that there's a lot worse things than dying. And one of those things is living like a slave or having our children lose all the freedoms that so many generations of Americans died to give us and to protect during the Revolutionary War. That was a whole generation of Americans that put their lives on the line, their fortunes, their property, their salaries, their reputations, their contacts on a line to purchase us these freedoms. And many of them died. During the Civil War, 659,000 Americans died to keep these freedoms, and we have to be willing, our generation, to make sacrifices to make sure that we don't lose them, And we've seen attacks, unprecedented attacks on our freedom of speech, on our freedom of worship, on all of the amendments of the Constitution over the past 3 years. They're unprecedented. And it's important for everybody to stand up and say, we're not going to do this. We're going to, even if there's some risks involved, reputational risks, salary risks, we need to make sacrifices for our country.
Wow. Can't say I disagree with a word of that. You can watch the full video on the Vigilant News Network article there. Well, it's no secret to anyone that the Australian government's response to dissidents is extremely heavy-handed. This was seen during the COVID era with police shooting at protesters with rubber bullets, tackling pregnant women to the ground, and arresting pregnant women in their homes for their Facebook posts. But that wasn't enough of a display of tyranny for the Australian government, and now they're chasing dissidents in other countries. They decided that adults cannot decide what is appropriate speech online, so they established the eSafety Commission. The eSafety Commission is headed up by Julie Inman Grant, who has previously worked with the White House, is a frequent attendee of the World Economic Forum, has spoken on the need to recalibrate free speech online, and is also an ex-employee of Twitter 1.0. Twitter 1.0 was, as we all know by the now infamous Twitter files, exposed for violating the US Constitution by way of violating Americans' First Amendment rights by censoring them on Twitter 1.0. So Julie Inman Grant has taken her fight to the internet to do what she calls protecting women and children from online harms, amongst other things. The only problem is, we can't see any evidence of eSafety actually doing anything to protect children, but they certainly are making every attempt possible to regulate online speech, in Australia and abroad, and they seem to have some sort of personal vendetta with somewhat free speech platform X. We don't know if this is because Julie Inman Grant used to work for Twitter or not, but much of her attention has unfairly been targeted towards X. For example, in October of 2023, the eSafety Commissioner issued a fine to Elon Musk's ex for over $610,000 Australian dollars. The reason for this fine, according to eSafety and the legacy media that no one watches anymore, was due to X failing to respond to a request detailing their handling of child exploitation material, or child sexual exploitation to be specific, on the platform. The part that the media failed to communicate was that there was an additional request for what X was doing to tackle hate speech, which X failed to respond to. Now, considering hate speech can't be defined by law, it's reasonable to not respond to such a frankly ridiculous request. What the media also failed to tell people was that Google failed to respond to the same request, except Google got off with a warning while X was issued a fine. That's weird. If your aim is to protect children from online harms, you would think the same rules would apply to every platform, but it is apparently not so. Well, now Julie Inman Grant appears to be crossing borders in her targeting of posts on X. The only problem for her is that the global community deems her attempts to silence people's opinions online as unreasonable, and a post that went from around 300,000 views has now had millions. Dystopian Down Under's Rebecca Barnett writes, "Spectacular backfire. Australian government's attempt to censor trans post draws heat." So the story is that on the 22nd of March, eSafety issued a notice to X and gave the platform 24 hours to take down this post by a Canadian activist who lives in Canada, Chris Elston, whose moniker Billboard Chris is a nod to his frequent public demonstrations wearing billboards carrying messages against gender ideology and medicine, especially in relation to children. The notice threatens civil penalty proceedings and a maximum penalty of $782,500 Australian for failure to comply. And you can see the post there, which is no longer available for viewing in Australia. But censoring it in Australia wasn't enough for Julie Inman Grant. She's demanding that X takes down the post of someone living in another country because she doesn't like the post. Billboard Chris joins us now to discuss. Billboard Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
Well, I am absolutely shocked at this story. I have a number of questions for you, but for anyone who's unfamiliar with how this all went down, please give us a brief summary of events.
Sure. So I was made aware that this individual, I guess Teddy Cook, is the vice president of the Australian Professional Association for Transgender Health. And Teddy Cook has been appointed to the World Health Organization's panel of 20 so-called experts to write healthcare policy for people with transgender identities. Now, Teddy Cook, who is this person? This is a woman who identifies as a man. She's cut off her breasts. She's into bondage. She's into bestiality, apparently, because she posted a picture of a dog having sex with a man. She has advised that trans-identified people have better sex when they're high on drugs. This is someone who, in my estimation, is clearly suffering from some mental health issues herself, and should not be in a position of writing healthcare policy for other people who are struggling with mental health issues. And that's essentially what I wrote on a post on X. I wrote that, first of all, I called her a woman because she is a woman, and your e-safety commissioner has deemed that to be misgendering. And I wrote that people who belong in psychiatric wards should not be writing healthcare policy for people who belong in psychiatric wards. And I'll concede that that post is a bit more acerbic than my normal one, but I stand by it because it's true. This is someone who's clearly struggling with issues, and she has no place advising other people who are struggling with these sorts of issues.
Well, this individual is clearly posting inappropriate photos on social media, including naked selfies on the beach, as you mentioned, what appears to be a man having sex with a dog, and has said that trans people have better sex when they're high on drugs. So these are very alarming statements, in my opinion, indicative of a very unstable individual, and an individual that encourages crime. These posts are clearly exposing children to online harms, which the eSafety says it exists to protect them from. Bestiality, for example, just one example, is illegal in Australia. In fact, it's considered a criminal offence under the country's animal welfare laws and criminal law. Are you aware of any attempts that the eSafety Commission or Julie Inman Grant have made to remove those posts from the internet, considering they are actual violation of Australian law?
No, of course not. Julie Inman Grant is clearly a trans activist And she doesn't respond to any of the complaints from women, actual women, when they are being threatened with violence or with sexual violence. Their calls for help have been met with deaf ears. So it's only people who claim that men can breastfeed and people like myself who think that the insane shouldn't be running the insane asylum who are having their tweets taken down.
Well, one of the WHO representatives who goes by Florence Ashley previously came under fire for calling the for mental health checks on trans children to be scrapped before they are given human puberty blockers and hormone drugs. And this was on TikTok, where there's a lot of children. This person has a Be Gay, Do Crimes tattoo. So we have another representative who was selected by the UN or the WHO, which is the UN's medical arm, who speaks on behalf of children's health that encourages them to do crimes. So, you know, even by the eSafety's own standards, these people are actually, as I said, even in the case of Teddy, these people are actually doing illegal things. And yet the target of Julian Mangrant seems to be anyone who criticizes this process of giving children irreversible, harmful, toxic drugs that are going to ruin their lives forever.
That's right. Now, we have all the evidence in the world to support claims from people like myself and yourself that these drugs and hormones are harming kids. This isn't 2016 or 2018 when the evidence was more scarce. We have the WPATH files, which just came out a month ago, which revealed that these so-called trans health professionals themselves know that children cannot give informed consent to these drugs, hormones, and surgeries. They know that they're sterilizing these kids. This one gender clinician, this doctor from British Columbia's Children's Hospital, where I'm from, admitted in a video that he follows these children into their 20s. And they get to the age of 24 or 25, where they're sterilized and they can't have a family, and now they're starting to have deep regrets. And he says so callously, yeah, the dog's not doing it for you, is it? As though having a family pet is somehow a replacement for having children. The people who have been put in charge of all of these organizations across the globe, including in Australia, to care for these vulnerable kids, who on average, the majority of them have five or more coexisting mental health comorbidities. Those aren't being treated at all. And it's like you just said, these people are now calling for the total abolition of therapy. It doesn't matter what else is going on in these children's lives. If they identify as the opposite sex, they simply want to affirm them and start them on this destroying lifelong series of meds, hormones, and surgeries. They're causing irreversible damage to children. Now, why can't we critique this? Why is this the one situation in the world where we're not allowed to offer our opinion? Because when we have kids coming to harm, we should be able to have a lot of conversations on this. But this has been the one subject that we're apparently not allowed to talk about at all. And just for me offering my opinion about a person who's in a position of authority in Australia, they threatened X with a $782,000 fine if they didn't take down my post.
I am absolutely fascinated in that aspect of this, Chris, because from what I understand, the eSafety Commission, or Julian Mangrant, who is essentially the arbiter of truth in Australia, like a Ministry of Truth head, which, by the way, some time ago, she demanded that an activist's accounts all over social media were taken down. The reason being because this particular activist from Binary Australia was drawing attention to the fact that a man who had never played football before, he was a trans influencer online on YouTube, and he all of a sudden joined the New South Wales women's football team, and three of the women on the field were severely injured, one to the point of hospitalization. So Binary Australia was raising awareness on this, talking about actual harm to women, and eSafety demanded and successfully deleted all social media profiles. I mean, this is unbelievable. But I am very... This person was Australian. How on earth does an Australian Ministry of Truth have the authority to demand the post that be taken down from someone in another country? So, for example, in Australia, you can't see your post right now. It's limited. But how can they demand your post? You live in another country. How can that be a demand? That it doesn't make sense to me.
I guess because Teddy Cook is Australian, so they pressure Elon Musk and X. But this isn't just some random individual. This is the vice president of the governing authority, which writes the so-called standards of care for people struggling with their gender identity issues. Now, apparently this was cyber abuse because I misgendered this individual. First of all, the only person misgendering Teddy Cook is Teddy herself. I use pronouns based on someone's sex, not based on a delusion and a magical gender identity that doesn't actually exist. I don't have to acknowledge that we have these things called gender identities, because guess what? We don't, but we're being forced to go along with this delusion. I have this expression that there are two sexes, zero genders, and infinite personalities, because that just sums us all up. And that's not hateful. That's not hateful at all. When you ask these people what a gender identity is, and I've had this conversation tens of thousands of times, because I travel around the world having conversations out in the real world, on the streets and at university campuses, about what I consider to be the greatest child abuse scandal in modern medicine history. Nobody can tell me what a gender identity is. I asked Google's new artificial intelligence thing called Gemini, I think it's called, what gender identity was. And Google's AI admitted itself that it was giving circular definitions, and it ended up apologizing to me because it also can't define what gender identity is. But ultimately, it just comes down to personality. And if a girl is more masculine or a boy is more effeminate, guess what? They're still girls and boys. And the positive message we should be sending is that there's no right way to be a girl or boy. If you're a girl and you want to chase lizards and ride dirt bikes and climb trees, well, there's a word for that. She's called a beautiful girl. And I always tell guys, these are the type of girls you want to marry when they grow up because they're more fun. But this whole ideology today hinges on one thing only: sexist regressive stereotypes of what it means to be a girl or a boy. It's a totally negative movement. There's nothing body positive about it at all. And we need to abolish it in its entirety.
Well, one thing I'm very, and I agree with you completely, Chris, and I'm so grateful for your activism in this area, because it's just madness what's taken over the Western world. It really is a cult. But one thing I'm very encouraged by is that your original post got, what, 300 odd thousand views, and now it's been viewed millions of times all over the world because of the tyrannical actions of the eSafety Commission, and completely unreasonable, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. So this is what's called the Streisand effect, where when you try to censor something online, it has the opposite effect and it gets seen 10 or 100 times more. And that's exactly what's happened with this. My original post was seen just not even 400,000 times. Now just that one post is closer to 2 million. But when you include all the other people tweeting about this and all the media that's covered this, it's into the tens of millions for sure. So I want to thank Julie Inman Grant from the bottom of my heart for trying to censor me, because it backfires spectacularly. And I hope she keeps trying to do it, because every time someone does this, I always just use it against them and make it be seen more. So they can try to censor us all they want, but you can't stop the truth, and the truth spreads for free, and we're just going to keep spreading it.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, Chris. You're actually, you know, in this entire battle, you're fighting for the rights of Australians to continue fighting for the truth. So from an Aussie, I'm very grateful for you. And we need to, at this current point, we're facing cross-border issues. We're all facing the same issues. It's important that we stand up for one another. So thank you for doing that. Please let people know where they can find you.
Sure. So mainly on X, at Billboard Chris. I'm on Instagram as well. And I have a website, which I'll be making better soon, but it's got all the basic info, and people can support me through there if they want, billboardchris.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time. Censorship always results in more people talking about the very issue they're trying to silence. When will they learn? We encourage everyone to read Rebecca Barnett's article in full, and we'll be keeping you up to date on this story as more unravels. Now, resolving to eat healthier this year was easy. Actually doing it? Not so easy. Better nutrition is a key to health and longevity, and a healthy diet could even help you avoid health risks that run in your family. Field of Greens is our healthy superfruit and vegetable habit. It's the only fruit and vegetable product that literally promises better health. At your next checkup, your doctor will notice your improved health or your money back. Do your vitamins or green drinks promise better health? Nope. Each superfruit and vegetable in Field of Greens was doctor-selected for a specific health benefit. Some support your heart, lungs, and kidneys. Others support metabolism for healthy energy and weight loss. If you resolve to get healthier in 2024, it starts with Field of Greens. We got you 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit brickhousevnn.com and use promo code VNN. That's promo code VNN at brickhousevnn.com. brickhousevnn.com. More and more young people are getting cancer, and the question is, and should be, why? Catherine, Princess of Wales, who on March 22nd announced that she has cancer, is part of an unfortunate new trend of more and younger cancer cases, according to Dr. Pierre Corey and journalist Mary Beth Pfeiffer. Corey and Pfeiffer addressed Princess Catherine's diagnosis in an op-ed published Tuesday in the Washington Times, in which they said there's evidence suggesting that the marked increase in cancers among young people may be linked to COVID-19 mRNA vaccines and pandemic policies such as lockdowns and vaccine mandates. They say we are facing an emerging toll of illness and death in the young. We cannot shirk from asking what is causing it. Corey, President and Chief Medical Officer of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, told The Defender that the early onset cancer and excess deaths are poised to become the next public health crisis that our medical system is not equipped to manage. The CDC data also shows red flags. Deaths from colorectal cancer rose 17% amongst people aged 15 to 44 in 2019 to 2023, four times the population-wide increase. Uterine cancer deaths rose 37% among people ages 25 to 44 from 2019 to 23, and overall, 15% overall. And there were much larger increases from 2019 to 2022 in liver and pancreatic cancer mortality in young adults than the overall population. The U.S. Society of Actuaries also reported 76% and 101% increases in death claims among insured workers aged 25 to 34 and 35 to 44. COVID-19 was ruled out as the cause, Corey and Pfeiffer said. In a March 27 Substack post about the data exposed in the op-ed, Corey said that he and Pfeiffer compiled and interpreted these and other data from government and professional society sources after bearing witness to so much medical carnage. Just a few weeks ago, he said, a 20-year-old patient of mine died of glioblastoma. He added, if that is not tragic enough, her parents told me that a 20-year-old man in her college friend group have died of the same a few weeks earlier. Unsurprisingly, their university had a vaccine mandate. Just a tragic coincidence, right? And reviewing the cancer facts and figures has convinced Corey that such cases aren't just a coincidence. And he says that we believe that the data strongly, if not definitely, implicates the COVID mRNA vaccines as the most proximate cause. We encourage everyone to read all of the details in that article on the Vigilant News Network. Well, John Stewart's hypocrisy has been exposed and people are asking, should he be prosecuted next? Comedian John Stewart, widely known for his pointed political commentary and satirical take on news events, recently ignited a firestorm of controversy over his criticisms of Donald Trump's civil lawsuit in New York, which alleges the former president inflated the value of his real estate holdings. Stewart lambasted the case as being far from victimless, a stance that quickly drew accusations of hypocrisy when details of his own property transactions came to light. At the heart of Stewart's critique was the assertion that Trump's alleged overvaluation of his properties was indicative of a broader issue within the real estate industry, a sector Stewart claims is rife with dishonesty and inflation of property values. During a segment on The Daily Show, Stewart played a clip of CNN's Laura Coates interviewing Shark Tank star Kevin O'Leary, who expressed concern over the precedent the case could set for the real estate industry at large. Stewart countered the industry's defense by highlighting the serious nature of the accusations against Trump, which include falsifying business records, insurance fraud, and conspiracy, all stemming from the inflation of asset values. He argued that such practices are far from victimless, suggesting they undermine the integrity of the financial system by diverting loans to those who misrepresent their assets, thereby incentivizing corruption. However, Stewart's position quickly came under scrutiny when it was revealed that he himself had sold a property at a price significantly higher than its assessed value. In 2014, Stewart sold his 6,280-square-foot Tribeca duplex for $17.5 million, a figure that starkly contrasts with the property's assessed market value of only $1.8 million. And an even lower assessor valuation of $847,174, as reported by the Post. You can view all the details of his hypocrisy and that sale on the Vigilant News article. Well, in yet another example of extreme government overreach, the FBI is demanding identities of users who watch certain YouTube videos. The FBI demanded that Google turn over the identities of tens of thousands of users who watch certain YouTube videos. Federal investigators obtained court-ordered subpoenas for any YouTube viewers who watch tutorials on mapping with drones and augmented reality software. The subpoena included names, addresses, telephone numbers, and browsing history for Google accounts for at least 30,000 people, tracing traffic to the relevant videos for the first week of January 2023. The government also wanted the IP addresses of non-Google account owners who viewed the videos. There is reason to believe that these records would be relevant and material to an ongoing criminal investigation, including by providing identification information about the perpetrators, the authorities claimed, according to Forbes. Google was also told to keep the request secret until it was unsealed earlier this week. It's unknown if Google complied with the subpoena. But that wasn't the only case of the FBI trampling on privacy rights, from Forbes. In another example involving an investigation in New Hampshire, the Portsmouth police received a threat from an unknown male that an explosive had been placed in a trash can in a public area. The order says that after the police searched the area, they learned they were being watched over a YouTube live stream camera associated with a local business. Federal investigators believe similar events have happened across the US where bomb threats were made and cops watched via YouTube. They asked Google to provide a list of accounts that viewed and or interacted with 8 YouTube live streams and the associated identifying information during specific timeframes. That included a video posted by Boston and Maine Live, which has 130,000 subscribers. Mike McCormack, who set up the company behind the account, IP Timelapse, said he knew about the order, adding that they related to swatting incidents directed at the camera views at the time. Now, Google claims that it's protecting their users' privacy, but privacy experts contended that the FBI's move was unconstitutional because it violated the First Amendment's free speech protections and freedom from unreasonable searches outlined in the Fourth Amendment. This is the latest chapter in a disturbing trend where we see governmental agencies increasingly transforming search warrants into digital dragnets. It's unconstitutional, it's terrifying, and it's happening every day, said Alberta Fox Khan, executive director at the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project. No one should fear a knock at the door from police simply because of what the YouTube algorithm serves up. I'm horrified that the courts are allowing this. Henry Kissinger once said, "Who controls the food supply can control the people." Today, the beef industry in America is under attack. Cows have been targeted by the purveyors of the climate change hoax in an effort to promote lab-grown meat, bugs, and other alternative proteins. It behooves Americans to start building up their own stockpiles of long-term storage beef. The problem there is that the vast majority of survival beef is horrible. They use low-quality cuts and beef crumbles that are barely edible. At VigilantBeef.com, Americans can get premium cuts like ribeye, New York strip, and tenderloin. It's freeze-dried, not dehydrated, which gives it a 25-year shelf life and retains the maximum nutrition and flavor. VigilantBeef.com is a veteran-owned, America-first company out of Texas. Our listeners can save 15% by using promo code VNN at VigilantBeef.com. That's promo code VNN at VigilantBeef.com. Well, the FDA has admitted that COVID vaccines cause seizures in toddlers. Toddlers and other young children faced a higher risk of seizures shortly after COVID-19 injection, according to a new study from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration researchers. The incidence of febrile seizures was 2.5 times higher among children within a day after receiving a Moderna shot than among the same children 8 to 63 days after vaccination, the researchers said. The risk was significantly elevated, they wrote in a preprint paper describing the results. You can find that paper linked on vigilantnews.com. There was also a higher risk for febrile seizures 0 to 1 day after the receipt of a Pfizer-BioNTech dose than in the 8 to 63-day window following vaccination, but that elevated risk was not statistically significant. Richard Forshee, deputy director of the FDA's Office of Biostatistics and Pharmacovigilance, and other researchers conducted the self-controlled case series by analyzing data from commercial databases. The data came from CVS Health, Optum, and Carelon Research. The children were 2 to 5 years old. Fever is a common side effect of the COVID-19 injection. Some 19% of children aged 2 to 3, for instance, in Pfizer's clinical trials, suffered fever after a second dose. Fever may also result in some cases in seizures, health officials said. You can read the rest of the details of that study on the Vigilant News Network. Well, Julian Assange has won the right to appeal extradition to the United States. However, this is not yet a win for Assange and his team, but more of another delay, and it comes with certain conditions. The case is very complicated, and his father, John Shipton, joins us now to discuss. John Shipton, thank you so much for joining us again for an update on Julian.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Maria. My regards.
So just a few days ago, right before Good Friday, a ruling was issued, and now it seems that although Julian has been granted appeal, it will depend on the US offering additional guarantees. Is that correct, John?
Yes, they require a set of assurances, free assurances of first that he won't be discriminated against because of his nationality, the second is that he won't receive the death penalty in the United States, and the third is the protection of the United States Constitution.
Well, this is the part that really is fascinating to me, because if Julian is given the protection of the U.S. Constitution, that effectively completely cancels out the case altogether, because the First Amendment would afford him the right to say or publish whatever he sees fit. That's what the First Amendment is.
Yes, I assume that, like Daniel Ellsberg many years ago, that they will pursue Julian despite the First Amendment. So they would argue that the First Amendment is too broad, and it doesn't cover the circumstances that Julian Assange published this, that, and the other. I imagine that they'll argue in that way, that espionage against the United States, it cannot reserve for itself the protection of the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights.
Well, then we circle back to this just never-ending trial on Julian Assange, who did nothing wrong. Publishing information is not an act of espionage. It's just simply publishing. And so it seems like even if the US offered those protections, first of all, who can trust them with the corrupt judicial system of the United States at the moment, persecuting political opponents, letting off violent criminals whilst they they deem mothers at school boards domestic terrorists. I mean, everyone can see that there is something very wrong with the judicial system in the US at the moment. And so who can trust it? But then secondly, if it goes down that direction and they say, oh, well, the Espionage Act is exceptional and, outside of the protections of the First Amendment, that just means years more of Julian suffering under conditions that cannot be guaranteed by the US. Really, they can't, because at this point, their guarantees can't be trusted. So just extending this absolute abuse of the human rights of a publisher.
Yeah, I can't say how much I agree with you. I mean, really, it's... But it is worthwhile looking at some of the details. For example, in the Rwanda case, the courts didn't accept the assurances of the Rwandan government that the deportees would be safely housed in Rwanda. They wouldn't be immediately executed. Now, the court didn't accept that. Also, it's not possible, as far as my understanding goes, that the Department of Justice give assurances about what a judge will decide who's hearing the case, which would mean that you instruct the judge to disregard certain aspects of his responsibility and only regard other aspects of his responsibility. I understand that that's simply not possible for the Department of Justice to do. And thirdly, Maria, the United States Department of Justice and other bodies don't make diplomatic assurances. And consequently, we look at the history of assurances given by the Department of Justice. There's one particular concerning a Spanish man that was assured that if he pleaded guilty, he would serve his time in jail in Spain. Well, it took him 7 years of court cases to have his incarceration moved to Spain. 7 years of court cases against the Department of Justice in activity in fulfilling their assurances. So we just can't believe the assurances on a number of grounds which I've just gone over.
I also am aware that the judge or those involved in the case said that they would not consider the proven CIA's attempt at Julian's life to assassinate Julian, and so they'll consider assurances from the same government that tried to assassinate Julian. Am I hearing this correctly?
Yes, yeah, they're planning to. Yeah, the CIA, in its own testimony, admitted to planning to kidnap or murder Julian, poison him, in fact. And another branch of the same government saying, oh, we'll look after him and he can stay in the country, but prison, whatever. Really, what we see here is the law utilized by government to bring a political case against the publisher to demonstrate, in no uncertain terms, to demonstrate that any publisher or any journalist or any publication that prints things, publishes things that we don't like, we will destroy you. Now, you've seen that happen in the United States in the case of Alex Jones, where they fined an absurd sum of $900 million over a matter of publication. This is, you know, pretty clear to us that the administration of the United States will only respond to Australia making its declaration of protection of Julian Assange in the very strongest of terms.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I was just about to say I really wanted to ask you about that. Have we had any progress on Australia making attempts? In my opinion, he is an Australian citizen. He should be here. I could care less what government is making what demand. The Australian government should stand up for their citizen and deal with it accordingly. Now, once he comes home, we can figure it out from there. But he shouldn't be in the UK. And considering that Australia is essentially part of the UK, why is this so difficult?
Well, I can't, you know, other than the United States acting under what I call deterrence by savagery, I can't see why the United Kingdom can't see where its own benefits lie, you know, where its interests lie. It seems to think that if they suck up to the United States in the destruction of Julian Assange, somehow they will be beneficiaries. The only benefit I can see is that the relationship between Australia and the United Kingdom is going to go into precipitous decline. You know, they want $3 odd billion from us to rebuild one of their rotting shipyards because they've run out of money. And they expect us to continue under these arrangements, when the fundamental aspect of the state of Australia in offering protection to the citizens of Australia who are undergoing persecution by a third party, it's beyond the imagination to think that Australia will continue in a relationship of that quality or that poor quality.
I was recently on a panel which featured after the screening of The Trust Fall in Sydney, the premiere of that movie, The Trustful, which will, I believe, be coming to the United States. It's currently showing in New Zealand and the UK. I encourage everyone to see it. You can go to thetrustful.org for the true picture of Julian Assange, the human and the persecuted human. And I am, I spoke on that panel, John, and I said we are seeing the increase of this you know, cross-border persecution. In fact, right now in Australia, and earlier in the broadcast, we covered a situation of a man from British Columbia who published something that the eSafety Commission in Australia didn't like. The eSafety is now looking to fine X and demanding that that post be taken down off the platform altogether. The man lives in British Columbia. He's free to publish whatever he wants, but now an arm of the Australian government is demanding that he takes it down. So not only are we talking about persecuting people in prison and letting them rot in prison for years on end, we're saying now you're not even allowed to say something a foreign government doesn't like. This cooperation between these governments is very alarming to me, John. And as always, it leads back to the example that they started to make with Julian Assange. When can we expect an update on this? When do we think the US will respond?
Well, they've got just a little less than 3 weeks. So within that 3 weeks, they have to make those three assurances, which, of course, we expect they will do. However, it is also a very fine and strong opportunity for the Australian government to make the strongest of representations to the United States, and the United States to its own benefit and its own soft power, popularity in the world, to simply say that the First Amendment is primary, and as a consequence of that, we will remove the charges against Julian Assange. These are elegant solutions to what is becoming a conflict between three nation states that are supposed to be on the same side.
Yes, absolutely. Well, John, we will continue praying for Julian and your family. We will obviously stay in touch with you and be on the lookout for what happens next. And I just encourage everyone watching this to continue fighting for Julian Assange. Your fight for him is a fight for us all. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you. Thank you, Maria.
We will continue to provide updates on Julian's case as they emerge. His battle really is the battle for us all. That's all that we have time for this week. Thank you all for joining us and for your continued support of this show. Please make sure to like, give us your thoughts in the comments, and share this broadcast widely. Also, please bookmark the post. The weaponization of community notes greatly affects the reach of your favorite accounts on X, so you can help them and us by bookmarking posts, which increases their visibility and reach. Follow Vigilant News and Vigilant Fox on X. Visit the Vigilant News Network website for regular updates, and find me on X also at Z_media. That's Z@EEE_media. We'll be back at 6 p.m. Eastern with The Truth next Sunday. The truth the mainstream media desperately does not want you to know, but we do. Until then, stay informed, stay vigilant. Good night. We'll be right back.